Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, I'm Genuinely Grace. Welcome to the podcast. It's been an interesting week, hasn't it, news-wise? I was quite interested to read some of the stuff around the duty on alcohol and people saying, oh, well, you know, I need alcohol because it's my treat. And that perception is just, it's incredible, isn't it? And that's the latest story about the vaping thing on the NHS. What is that even about? Seriously. Like medically approved. It's, anyways, don't get me started. Okay, this has been one of those weeks where it's a don't get me started on what's going on in the news. I'm not even going to talk about it. So I've got the most fantastic guest lined up for you. I've known Dr. David Hamilton for absolutely years and years, and I've interviewed him, of course, on the podcast before. We're both Hay House authors, although he's way more prolific than I am, that's for sure. And I met David years ago on various Hay House events. So we've known each other a long time. I'm just such a big fan of his work. And if you haven't read some of David's earlier books, then you know, you're really in for a treat, because his stuff is fantastic. Why Kindness is Good for You is just one of the most incredible books for just changing your perception on this whole concept of you know, when you're kind to someone else, you get even more benefit than they do as the recipient. And I was reminded of that this week, because there's something I really need help with, and I kind of half reached out to a friend, but at the same time I was kind of saying, oh, well, I don't really want to put you out, and you know, I don't want to make it too difficult. And then she said, but wouldn't you be the one telling me that, you know, kindness is good for you? If you ask for help, that enables someone else to be able to be kind, and also it enables them to be able to ask for help from someone else. So yeah, it's one of those kind of win-win situations. In the Sober Club this week, we've had some great chats, actually. I remember there was one woman in our community who had a wedding to go to, and she's not been sober for very long, and she really sort of got the jitters about this. It's like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? And I think it was a very close family member, and she just got stressed about the fact that she was going to be sitting at a table with people who were all drinking, and the whole focus was around drinking, and all the people that, you know, she's known for years who all drink, and they know her as a drinker. It was her identity. And she just had this kind of big wobble, and then just one by one, all these messages flew in, and everyone said, oh, wow, you're so lucky. And if only I could have had my daughter's wedding or my, you know, son's wedding or whatever sober, and you'll have a fabulous time. And lots of advice to prep ahead, of course. That's always the key. Make sure you take your own bottle of alcohol-free fizz if the venue don't have it or whatever. So we all kind of love-bombed her, really, with great suggestions. And of course, she then posted to say she'd had the most amazing day. And that's what happens. This is just all about mindset. None of us need alcohol, for God's sake. It's just about mindset. It really is. I always think it's incredible when people say, oh, you know, well, I'm not very good with white wine, so I might try spirits. Like, well, how about not trying any of it, right? Anyways, as you know, in the Sober Club, you know, one of the things that we do is this holistic picture. So because of my background, because of the books I've written that cover all aspects of holistic health and well-being, I just can't stop myself, really. I kind of have to introduce other topics. Well, many, many other topics. So, you know, over the last few couple of years in the Sober Club, we've had experts on, obviously, on all the basics, you know, nutrition and mindset and meditation. We've got a great exclusive session coming up with John Siddiqui, actually, which will be great. Amazing meditation guru. But we also do, you know, other stuff, like we have fabulous sessions with Beverly Densham, who's an angel expert. We had Joe Soley, who did a numerology session for us. So we kind of get into these weird and wacky things. And of course, it's not for everyone. Some people choose not to rock up to those sessions. But of course, they're very welcome, whether they do or they don't. But often often people will say to me, oh, you know, I'm not really sure about the woo-woo stuff. You know, it's kind of not me. And my answer to that is, well, that's completely fine. It really doesn't matter. Whatever floats your boat, doesn't matter. Whatever it means for you to be, you know, in optimum health and well-being, that's kind of my take on it. I do believe that everybody needs something in their life that links to some form of spirituality. I think it's really difficult without it. And I think when you're drinking, it's really difficult to have that spiritual element, actually. You've heard me talk about that a lot. The fact that because I wasn't really authentic with who I was, of course I couldn't sit in meditation. I didn't have that, you know, come from that authentic space. So it's very different once you ditch the booze and you actually start to maybe like yourself a little bit more. So anyways, that's a very long-winded way of saying that I was just thrilled when I saw that David, who is a scientist, you know, let's just get that straight. It's all very well for me to talk to you about, you know, Reiki and all the rest of it. But when someone like David Hamilton talks about it, it really has a different depth. So David's new book is called Why Woo Woo Works, The Surprising Science Behind Meditation, Reiki, Crystals and Other Alternative Practice. I just thought this would be a great guest for the podcast because David really knows his stuff and we have a chat about lots of things that, you know, you might have heard of, and he'll give you the kind of the scientific lowdown, if you like. So have a look at the show notes and I'll give you a link to his work and a link to the book. But I think you're really going to enjoy the interview. Just before we get into that, I must share with you that I think there might be a couple of spaces for our Champneys retreat on the 20th of November. I'm not sure, but there's another one in January. And also super exciting to announce that I've set up my first ever Constellations Workshop Day. It's going to be a kind of an introduction to family constellations and based around where trauma meets addiction. But don't worry, it's not too heavy or anything. And I'm going to be working with a guy who specialises in adverse childhood experiences and trauma and really it's about how we can get unstuck. You know, the fact that most of us have got stuff going on, it would be quite unusual if we didn't. But you know, we don't have to stay stuck. So just like with the sobriety, it's a very positive approach to how we can, you know, kind of move forward rather than being held back by stuff that still impacts us, you know, stuff that might have happened to us as a child, but still impacts on us. And indeed, the inherited family trauma stuff, which, you know, we'll talk about as well. So it's going to be a super exciting day. I'm really looking forward to hosting it. It's going to be in Hertfordshire on Sunday, the 28th of November. So if that's something you're interested in, go to thesoberclub.com, click on events along the kind of menu bar there. Be very limited spaces, of course, but be fabulous to see some of you there if that's something you're interested in. You've probably heard, you all will have heard me talk about constellations and just how important I think that work can be when it comes to just really owning who you are and just it just changes your relationships in an incredible way. So really looking forward to that day. Just click on events or just drop me a message if that's something that you're interested in. And yeah, as I say, we've got another Champneys in January. And I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to put together kind of a Christmas social kind of thing in York, just outside York. So keep your eye open for that as well. See if we manage to get that one together. It's kind of uncertain, isn't it, booking anything really at the moment. It's really difficult because no one knows exactly what's going down. But here's hoping these events will come off. Anyways, without me wittering on too much, let's chat to David. I'm absolutely delighted to get to chat to David again, Dr. David Hamilton, my old mate. I've not seen you for ages, David.
I know, it's unbelievable.
You've been mega busy, right?
Yeah, well, just trying to keep myself busy. You know, too busy, actually yeah. Some days. But it's really great to see you again.
I know, it's lovely to see you. I mean, you are such a prolific author. Really, really incredible amount of amazing books you put out. I think I probably first became aware of you with Why Kindness is Good for You, and of course many of your other books. I Heart
Jenny,
Me.
I actually came to see you speaking probably before we actually met.
Oh, really?
I watched you speaking at a conference in Edinburgh, and you spoke on Imperfectly Natural
Women. Oh, Imperfectly Natural Women, right. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that event.
It was in Edinburgh, an inspirational conference. And I came and you were my top speaker of the day.
Oh,
I took so many notes and changed things about my diet.
Learned how to clean your loo.
Yeah. It was so cool.
Brilliant. Well, look, this latest book, I mean, it just is, I mean, just the second you hear the title, you know that this is something very special. Why Woo Woo Works. Fill in the strapline for me.
Oh, the surprising science between meditation, the surprising science behind meditation, Reiki, crystals, and other alternative practices.
Awesome. Now, this couldn't have come from a better person, of course, because you are, you know, obviously from a scientific background. That's why it gives so much fabulous gravitas to all the stuff you talk about. You know, I can bang on about woo-woo stuff and kindness and Reiki and all the rest of it. And everyone can think, oh, yeah, there she goes, you know, being hippie and woo-woo. But you really do have that scientific background. So before we get into the book, just give us a little bit of your kind of potted history for anyone who hasn't come across your work.
Yeah, I worked as an R&D scientist in a really big pharmaceutical company, really building drugs for heart disease and cancer. I say building drugs, I was what you call an organic chemist, which is like an adult who plays Lego. But instead of using, you know, plastic building blocks to assemble a variety of shapes, you use atomic building blocks. But the idea is the same. It's like Lego. And I used to literally build atomically what became, you know, heart medicines and cancer medicines. But I really was more intrigued by the placebo effect. And I started to study it in my spare time when I worked in the industry. At the time, you know, this was, you know, I started working in the pharmaceutical industry in the late 90s, and the mind-body connection was not understood very well at all.
Yeah.
And so when I started to suggest to my colleagues that there could be some mind-body connection that explained the placebo effect, you know, they used to laugh, call it quackery. I mean, not unkindly, we were all just friends, you know, but you know the way friends banter, oh, it's all quackery, and all that kind of stuff, because nobody understood it. So we just assumed, and this is actually a common theme through all perception of woo-woo. We just assumed, you know, that, or my colleagues assumed that people who responded to placebo were just going to get better anyway. But I began to research it and realized that there was actually something going on. And it turned out even then, there was lots of available science.
Yeah.
But we just didn't know that. And I find, and one of my motivations behind the book is, so many people refer to things as woo-woo, sometimes even pseudoscience, not because they're speaking from a position of knowledge and authority, and they can rightly say, oh, that's woo-woo or pseudoscience. Most of the time you find it's because they're not experts at all.
Yeah.
And actually really don't know that there is available science and there is available philosophical thought. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to the best of my ability, pull a lot of that together and at least give people who do practice these kind of things a wee bit of, you know, backing to say there is a lot of stuff there. And for people who are skeptical, to say, look, before you be skeptical, at least look at some of the data and you'll see that maybe, you know, we shouldn't really be calling these things woo-woo after all. Because the definition of woo-woo really is unconventional beliefs regarding as having little or no scientific data.
Exactly. It's very derogatory, isn't it?
It's very, very derogatory.
Yeah. And I mean, we're also used to being, you know, sort of laughed at and being called woo-woo. But as you say, there is so much science, you know, behind all of this stuff. So where did you kind of start when you were thinking about the book, about what you would include, about, you know, I mean, were there aspects of this that came as a bit of a surprise to you when you actually did a bit more digging deep?
Yeah. I mean, I started in what I call the lower end of woo-woo.
Yeah.
I go from the lower end to the high end.
You know, go on then. Give us a benchmark.
You know,
because I'm probably at all ends.
Yeah, well, me too, actually.
Or at least I have been there over the years. Let's put it that way.
Well, I know exactly what you mean. I kind of flip between all three. But, you know, the lower end, I call it things like, you know, the impact of thoughts and emotions on your brain, on your physiology, you know, placebo effect, meditation, even things like how emotions can, you know, trapped emotion can have an impact by almost storing up charge in the nervous system in the context of trauma, kind of lower end of woo-woo, meaning at least some people are aware that there probably is research, even though most people don't know about it. So I gathered a lot of that. Then moving into things like Reiki and crystals,
yeah,
I call the kind of mid-range and the idea that perception shapes reality and show that there's a heck of a lot of science available, either trial data or at least show why these things might work for us. Moving into the higher end, you know, like psi, ESP, telepathy, prayer, all that kind of stuff, even law of attraction, and sketched a whole basis of science. To answer your question, what was most surprising to me was just how much science there was that could explain how crystals work.
Ah, interesting.
That was, for me, the most surprising, in fact, so much so that it's the biggest chapter. I had to take out about three. It was too long, and you can't have a chapter that takes longer than an hour to read for audiobooks. Otherwise, Audible and other things, they just snap over into two chapters and it spoils the flow.
Right.
So you're really limited in the number of words. So I literally had to chop off
that chapter. So give us a bit more detail on that then. What should we be looking for crystals? Can we all benefit from with crystals?
In terms of crystals, there's actually three different ways. Now, first of all, there isn't any scientific studies on crystals because, to be honest, most academics wouldn't touch the subject anyway. That doesn't mean that there's nothing there. They just probably wouldn't touch it for the sake of their careers. I know what that's like. There's certain subjects I would have avoided in the past as well for the sake of people, you know, almost ridiculing.
Yeah,
But what there is, though, is lots of research that would suggest why they might work for us. Let me give you an example of where I'm coming from. So in the Buddhist teaching of Dzogchen, you know, D-Z-O-G-C-H-N, Dzogchen, they often use a clear crystal. The teachers use a clear crystal.
Like a quartz crystal.
Like a clear quartz. Yeah. So this is a citrine I've got here, but a clear quartz. Now, what the clarity of the quartz does is it serves as what's called a mental representation. Now, in cognitive psychology, that's a really well-known area of research. So by mental representation, what I mean is that the teachers of Dzogchen use that as a focal point for the practitioners, and it gives them something to focus on because the clarity of the crystal represents to them the clarity and the clear state of mind and being that one wishes to attain.
Yeah,
so it becomes a focal point, something to focus on. So the moment by holding the crystal, even by having it in your visual field, and you see the clarity of it, your mind becomes less muddled and fuddy because you keep looking at it and seeing it, and that reminds you, I have to achieve a clear state of being. So it's like a constant reminder. Now, common sense tells you having a constant reminder of a goal is going to help you achieve that goal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I love this. I love the whole idea of this. This is brilliant for, you know, a lot of people I work with who have absolutely set a goal and they want to ditch the booze or they want to, you know, improve something. They're really on a mission to, you know, go for optimum health. So, I mean, what crystals specifically should we start with then?
Well, if, for example, someone wants to get clearer of mind, because we know in cognitive psychology that a mental representation can actually impact your behavior. It can impact how you feel. So if someone wants a clearer focus, a clearer state of mind, then it'd be a good idea to have something really clear, like something with a really high degree of purity. I mean, I'm using citrine here only because I don't have a clear quartz to hand from where I am, but citrine is quartz. It's just got a couple of little other ingredients in it that slightly tinges the color, but its clarity is good because it's ultra pure and clear.
Yeah.
So it reminds me of having a clear state of mind. But crystals can work in other ways because there's a very well-developed science of color psychology that shows that we have ingrained psychological associations with color. And when I say ingrained, I really mean that, you know, for example, people wonder why is it that blue is a calming color? Because over eons of evolution, our ancestors looked up at a blue sky while feeling calm. When it was cloudy and gray and stormy, we had that association with a lower mood. But when the sun came out, the sky was blue, we felt more calm. And the sun itself, the color, the yellow color in cognitive and color psychology is a happy, brings up happy and cheerfulness. Now, we've also all had the perception of a nice calming blue sky off the coast of, like, you know, Sardinia or something like that. So we have these ingrained associations with color. Red, for example, can mean fire
and anger,
and power,
passion,
and all
that.
Yeah, and these ingrained associations are so ingrained that they can actually impact brain processes. Let me give you an example. So scientists did a study. They gave volunteers a cherry flavored drink, but they put bright green dye in it, right? So a cherry flavored drink, it's cherry flavored, but they colored it green. Do you know 37% of people couldn't taste cherry at all? They had no perception of cherry. They could swear that what they were drinking was either lemon or lime flavored. Mm. In other words, the brain processed flavor based on its color.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not on what it actually was. In a similar experiment, scientists gave volunteers pineapple sherbet, but they colored it pink. And again, about the same number of people couldn't taste pineapple and swore it tasted like bubblegum.
Fascinating.
Isn't that amazing? So perception of color actually overruled brain processes for actual flavor itself. And that is such a widespread thing. We use it in pharmaceutical drug manufacturing. For example, if you give people a well-known study, actually gave volunteers, half of the volunteers got a blue colored placebo. The other half got a pink placebo. And they understood that this wasn't a placebo, it was a real drug, and it was to cause a calming effect. Do you know blue was 2.5 times more potent, 250% more potent than pink for inducing a calming effect. So we have ingrained over eons and over decades of life experience as well, we have ingrained psychological associations with colour. So if, for example, someone wears a brightly coloured yellow top, they might feel more cheery because of what the colour, So similarly with crystals, crystals, whether in jewellery or as aids to meditation, the colour itself, because of a perception of them and the closeness and proximity, like this is my crystal and I'm using a yellow crystal, can make me feel more cheery. For example, purple, for example, is a colour associated with royalty and authenticity. So people say it helps them to get more in tune with themselves and therefore develop their intuition. So you find that many of the reported benefits of psychological benefits of crystals are very, very consistent with the well-known science of color psychology.
Amazing.
I'm not suggesting, take a crystal, it's going to heal your kidney or something. I'm not meaning that kind of stuff. But in the book, what I did is present why crystals could actually work from us, from color psychology, from cognitive psychology in terms of mental representation, and even some physical properties based on the way crystals can, really change the flow of the Earth's magnetic field.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, isn't it? And we won't get into it all now, but I know in the past, you've done a huge amount of work around, the power of the mind and visualization and, how by visualizing something, it can have exactly the same effect as by actually doing it, and this stuff is just incredible when you know what you're going after. You've got a greater chance of getting there if you can actually see it, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Tell us about Reiki then, because that always comes under fire, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, Reiki was actually one of the first places I started. I trained in Reiki 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, see, when I worked in the pharmaceutical industry, I'd had, as well as, 7 years at that point, formal academic training, studying, followed by another, 4 years of a fast-paced research and development environment. So I took more than a decade of immersed in the goals of mainstream medicine. But yeah, I had a lot of personal experience when I was younger of the benefits of woo-woo. My mum had postnatal depression or postpartum depression when I was 6 years old, after the birth of my youngest sister. I've got three sisters. My youngest sister, born in 1976, my mum had postnatal depression. It wasn't understood back then. Mm. And in fact, one of the psychiatrists, the advice they gave my mum was that she really should just give herself a shake.
Yeah.
Asking a woman with postnatal depression to give herself a shake, what's that? Yeah. That's like asking someone with a broken hip to just run it off, it'll be fine. And so my mum didn't get the treatment that she needed. She developed depression and anxiety, and it was really, really tough. And I found a book for her one day in the school library. In fact, as woo-woo as I sound, the book fell off the shelf. called The Magic Power of Your Mind.
Brilliant.
By Walter Germain. Now, I gave it to my mum. It didn't cure depression in a day. Of course it didn't. But what it did is it gave her tools, insights and tools and strategies that really helped her navigate a course through the next few years. For example, my mum learned meditation. and positive affirmations from that book. Now, back then we didn't call it meditation, it was called relaxation. This was back in, now we're talking the early 80s. My mum listened to a relaxation tape going to bed every night for decades, and it was so helpful. Other helpful things were positive affirmations. I included meditation and affirmations in the book for that reason. Yeah. And my mum and I, because she used to pump her wrist and say, I can do it, mind over matter, it's a thought that counts. And what it did, it was almost like helped her to steer the metaphorical boat over the, the waves that move you from to and fro on the ocean of life. And my mum could kind of steer her sails a little bit better, having these insights and focus. Now, that was all woo-woo. And so I knew about that. And the more time I spent in the pharmaceutical industry, and the more other types of experiences, one of my friends, when I worked here, one of my fellow scientists trained in Reiki while I was working in the pharmaceutical industry. And I got a session. It was amazing. And so I believed that there was something to be gained from a fusion of the best of the West and the best of all the rest.
Yeah.
So what we call mainstream and complementary. I was sure that there must be something to be had from a fusion. So when I left the industry, I wanted to go out and use science to inspire. Because my skill set, as well as being, a good researcher, my skill set, I felt, was always in education. And I thought, there's enough people doing organic chemistry, building drugs, plenty of people, really talented scientists. I'm better served educating. So I decided to leave and start researching and teaching about how to harness mind and emotions to improve our health. And so I dabbled in woo-woo. I trained in Reiki. I went on a year course every second weekend to learn about crystals, which even back then, it was the basis was meditation, which just really is aids to meditation. And so over the years, I've gathered evidence and experienced myself. And this is what sometimes, I find it's disrespectful sometimes when people call things like Reiki woo-woo.
No, absolutely. Because that's exactly what I mean when I say it comes under fire. People don't know anything about it.
They don't know anything about it. So I decided to learn experientially about it and then learn the science. And there's been randomized controlled trials and meta-analysis, i.e. statistical analysis of randomized controlled trials, showing that Reiki is highly effective for reducing pain, anxiety, and depression over a range of conditions, including even reducing side effects of patients undergoing cancer. That's something I have actually had firsthand, people sharing me their experience. I've taught umpteen times in cancer centres for cancer charities, where people who are going through mainstream treatment for cancer come to these centres, these charitable centres, to experience complementary therapies, which often helps reduce the side effects.
Absolutely.
Scientists have actually shown a reduction in side effects under these kind of conditions when people get Reiki. So I've had lots of people telling me how the woo-woo stuff was so beneficial for reducing their anxiety.
I had Reiki all through certainly the first baby I had, about a 35-hour labour. I had loads of Reiki. I was so grateful for that. It really made a difference.
Janie, there's been studies comparing women who got Reiki versus pretend Reiki or mimic Reiki after having given birth.
Right.
After a cesarean section. And what they do is they compare Reiki against an actor who's trained in by having studied videos of a Reiki master, and they mimic the same movements. And yet what you find in all these studies, or most of the studies, is those who did the Reiki, the results are better. The pain reductions, depression and anxiety improvements are better for Reiki versus fake or mimic.
How important is the therapist in all of this then, or the practitioner? Because one of the things that often gets said about any complementary treatments and therapies is that it's a shame that it's not regulated. There's not a lot of it that's regulated, and sometimes it's a really great idea to be recommended to someone because it can be tricky. Given that, how much of the success in inverted commas is down to the energy, the healing hands of the person, as it were, rather than the modality?
Yeah, there's a whole host of interacting factors. In fact, I call these active ingredients. And I say that because having worked in a drugs research and development environment, we get ingrained into us the importance of the single active ingredient. Now, if you take a paracetamol, right? In paracetamol, there's a single active ingredient. It's paracetamol. But as well as that, you've got several other ingredients called excipients. These are just things to hold it together to improve the dissolvability, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you have one active ingredient. And so ingrained in the psyche of scientists like myself, in terms of medicine, is the one active ingredient. But that active ingredient doesn't apply just to on its own to holistic therapies. In fact, it doesn't even just apply in medicine, because I pointed out several active ingredients. One is empathy. Do you know what? One of my favorite studies on this was people went into a GP surgery and for symptoms of the common cold, over 700 patients over the course of 18 months. And they were asked to give their GP a rating of empathy. You know, those who scored the GP a 10 out of 10, perfect, the GP was so empathetic, their recovery rates were nearly 50% faster and their immune response is almost 50% higher than everyone else. Another study, 175 prostate cancer patients who scored their doctor high on empathy. Even 3 months later, they had higher levels of natural killer cells in their bloodstream. So as well as the active ingredient of the medicine, you've got empathy as an active ingredient. You've also got the language that a doctor uses. There's several active ingredients that our focus on a single active ingredient has caused us to miss all the other things. But in complementary therapies, these things are more obvious. And the reason they're more obvious is because the client, the practitioner and the client spend much more time together. They're not just there for 7 minutes. Mm. They're there for like an hour or at very least half an hour.
Yeah, so and that human connection part is really critical, isn't it?
Human connection is an active ingredient. Empathy is an active ingredient. But what also is an active ingredient is even the setting that it takes place. And most therapies take place in what's called a restorative setting.
Yeah.
Whether it's the way the makeup of the room, or whether it's the soft music playing, or even the image out of a window of some trees or something, or it's the calming presence of the practitioner, all of these things create in the human nervous system a restorative experience, which optimizes the immune system. So before anything is done, the patient is already moving towards some form of wellness. On that basis alone, actually, in the book, I called for a closer integration between mainstream and complementary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where it is regulated. And because I've spoken to a number of GPs, some of them are friends. And, you know, the concern among GPs is, what if someone with a pain goes to see a Reiki practitioner instead of coming to see their GP? Now, the pain might diminish through the Reiki session, but what if the pain is masking something really serious that the practitioner wouldn't be able to spot? So that's a genuine concern in the mainstream. So one of my proposals for that is, let's have a formal integration where people who want to align themselves with health services in their own countries get formally trained by doctors, trained to spot certain things, trained to ask particular questions, so that if there's any indication whatsoever,
that
there could be something underlying, just straight to the doctor. And then the GPs would then maybe have more faith in referring people, and that might offload some of the burden, because one of the worries that GPs have is they've got some really chronically ill patients, and they could spend more time on the chronically ill patients and divert some of these resources to complementary therapists, where people would actually benefit
absolutely
from a more restorative setting. So I've actually called for that integration.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, I love that. I love everything about that. And one of the things that I bang on about the whole time is the fact that, you know, people do need that human connection. But one of the problems is, if you rock up to a GP and, about, I don't know, something, you know, problem with your foot, if you feel safe and you feel that person has empathy, and then you happen to mention on your way out, you know, it's the doorknob thing, isn't it? As you're going out the door, oh, by the way, I'm really worried about my drinking. You know, the answer is usually, well, how much are you drinking? Obviously you lie. Oh, a couple of glasses. Well, you seem fine. Just have a glass of water. And then that's it. And you're off and you're gone. And there's no joined up thinking there. There's no holistic picture. So I love the idea of that. I also had a friend who's a nurse. This was a few years ago now, who trained in mindfulness, and she was finding that with a lot of the patients that she was looking after, she would teach them a couple of little mindfulness techniques or just do a bit of breathing with them. And then she discovered that actually when a patient was in pain, she actually timed it and found that she could get a quicker result by actually breathing with them to bring the pain down. And she actually timed it. It took less time than to check the weight of the patient, check the notes, go to the medication cupboard, administer the medication, wait for it to kick in. But of course, it's not, the gig's not been taken up, let's put it that way. But you're absolutely right. That integrated approach is just everything, isn't it? Really everything.
Absolutely. I mean, there is other things going on in a Reiki session. You asked, another thing you mentioned was, you know, how important is the practitioner themselves?
Yeah.
So just like a doctor gets different results depending on how much empathy they have or their use of language a lot of the time. The same applies with different Reiki practitioners. You could have people who are very high, and I guess their mind is very much aligned with service and empathy. Yeah. And you find then because of that, their impact on the patient, on the client, will be greater than someone whose mind isn't so aligned with the idea of service. I'm here to help you in your highest good. So there's a lot of individual little factors. I've tried to explain why these things matter.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then what about things like nature? Because I know in the book you talk about, you know, the importance of nature.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, patients recover faster. Hospital patients recover faster if their window offers them a view of natural surroundings versus a brick wall, meaning, you know, from another hospital building or even of a car park. And one, the reason for that is over eons of evolution, humans evolved, our ancient ancestors have lived 99.99% of our time in natural surroundings, meaning being able to see trees and grass and flowers and with you know, a natural setting, the song of birds and maybe gentle running water, etc. We've only spent 0.01% of our time in blocky, built-up surroundings with glass window panes. So 99.99 versus 0.01. So then we ask ourselves, what was life like for that 99.99% of time? Well, of course, generally speaking, they were much more calm than we are. And I say that, of course, it was a more hostile environment, but not all the time, not every single moment of every single day. Generally speaking, relatively speaking, they were much more calm in terms of, they would go days, weeks even, with just relaxed, sitting about, not really doing anything. Whereas nowadays, most humans are constantly worrying about the future, you know, going over the past, worrying about how am I going to do this, how am I going to do that, background stress all the time. So our nervous system is on alert. We are sympathetically dominant, whereas there, for eons of life, the human ancestors experienced what's called parasympathetic dominance. Now, parasympathetic dominance means that the nervous system is in a state of rest and digest or relax and calm. So the reason why, this is how science understands this, the reason why we feel the human nervous system automatically relaxes when you see something natural is because of that 99.99% of our pre-time, which is ingrained into the human nervous system and the human genome. The moment we see these things, the nervous system kicks into what our body essentially remembers natural settings. So the body immediately, the nervous system goes and it flicks into parasympathetic dominance, whereas most of us live most of the time under sympathetic dominance. So that's why hospital windows, when they give a view of nature, patients tend to recover faster than if they see a car park or a brick wall.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love it. I love everything about this book. It's just fabulous. What would you say then, you know, people kind of take away from this? What do you think that, you know, has anyone said to you, do you know what, now I've read that, I'm going to do X and X and X, like right away?
So far, you know, the book's only been out a couple of weeks, but so far the kind of feedback I'm getting is people feeling more justified.
Yeah.
In doing what they're doing, and a little bit more confident in doing what they do. And also some people have said, you know, feeling less afraid to let people know that they're practicing Reiki or that they have crystals in their house, because afraid meaning because they think some people are going to be skeptical or ridicule them, unfairly ridicule. So some people, it's given them a wee bit of confidence. The other side of it, you know, there's a couple of people who would be generally quite skeptical have actually said, you know, I had no idea. Honestly, I had no idea. Kind of open-minded skepticism. I had no idea about that kind of evidence. Actually, no idea. And also, even when you got into the really heavy woo-woo, no, you know, who might have dismissed things like Psi in the past. You know, Psi is the umbrella term for prayer, distant healing, ESP, telepathy, all that kind of stuff. Had no idea of the statistical analysis that have been done on that kind of stuff. And so even a bit of eye-opening from a couple of people as well.
Yeah.
And the whole so far, it's people feeling more confident in doing what they do and less afraid to tell other people in case they label what they do woo-woo.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous that after all this time and so much has been done now, it's ridiculous that we have to sort of preempt everything we say with you know, sorry if you think this is a bit woo-woo. I mean, I find myself doing it all the time. You know, I constantly apologize before I talk about, I've just trained in family constellations, which is just the most amazing thing. You were talking about, you know, trauma being held in the cells. It's epigenetics. It's absolutely science-based. Yeah. But nevertheless, you just feel this kind of tendency to apologize first.
Judy, I still apologize to people, even though I know the science behind a lot of these things, but I'm apologizing because I know what their perception is going to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So that's what you're doing. You're changing these perceptions. It's absolutely brilliant. So what crystals have you got? We have to ask you that. What do you own? Have you got yourself a lovely little set?
I've got loads.
Have you?
this is the one I've been using that a lot at the moment.
That's like a citrine. It's beautiful. Yeah,
it's my clearest crystal in terms of it has the most clarity, even though it's not, you know, clear in the sense of no colour. Mm. But the clarity itself does serve the same purpose, if you will. I've got over on my desk, I've got some wee magnetite ones I've got there. I use them as wee magnets and stuff. I've got amethyst over there. I've got just different color. I like colors as well.
Great. Did you cover EFT in the book, Emotional Freedom Technique?
I touched on it, right? About a page on EFT and EMDR.
Yeah, because there has been definitely been scientific studies done on EFT.
Dr. Peter Stapleton, a professor of clinical psychology at Bond University, actually did the world's first MRI scans of people who had food cravings. He started with food cravings partly because it was less likely to be criticized.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so chose
more tangible.
That less like, because it's easier sometimes to get published when you're less likely to be criticized.
Yes, yes.
So she chose food cravings as something, a gentle introduction that people would accept, and took MRI scans before and after 4 weeks of tapping, you know, of EFT tapping.
Yeah.
And amazingly, not only did tapping eliminate food cravings, but actually completely changed brain activation, you know, completely changed, shown an MRI, the activation of the brain for previous foods that people really, really craved. You know, so you look at a piece of chocolate now, and it's not just like, oh, I'm over that now. The brain activity had completely changed after EFT. So that's when it became really, really powerful.
Amazing. Oh, David, that's just so, so great. What a great book. It's just really going to be make such a difference. You know, everyone, if someone starts to woo-woo shame you, we can now point out your book. So take a look at this.
I have had wee bits of skepticism as well, but fascinatingly, the people who are skeptical have never read the book.
Yeah, of course not. Of course they haven't.
You know, and it's really funny because they're skeptical of particular things that they think is woo-woo. And they're exactly the people I have written about in some of the parts of the book, that we should be careful not to label things of woo-woo if we're not experts in the subject.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And I've had a bit of that skepticism already. And what's fascinating is they're confirming exactly what I wrote in the book, because they're skeptical, not because they're actually experts and know if such and such a thing is true. It's because they have a preconceived notion.
Absolutely.
Of what's
absolutely
true. I found it fascinating and amusing in equal parts.
Brilliant. David, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Just remind us of your website where people can, you know, follow all of your work.
It's drdavidhamilton.com.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jake. Janie, thanks for inviting me.
Thank you.
So check the show notes for the link to the book and more about David's work. I hugely recommend any of his books. He's just great. And if you get a chance to see him live, he's brilliant as well. Great speaker. Don't forget then that Family Constellations date, the Where Trauma Meets Addiction, is Sunday 28th of November in Hertfordshire. And more, all the info will be up there real soon if it isn't yet. And also Champneys, of course, any of that stuff, possible Christmas stuff. Just drop me a message if that's something you're interested in. I know you're not all in the UK, which is a huge shame that we can't travel a lot at the moment. But at some point, you know, I'm looking forward to meeting some of my Sober Club members who are in Australia. It'll be just amazing when we can get together. That really is going to be a party. You know where to find me on social media, at Janie Lee Grace. Please follow me on Instagram and all the other various places. I do get lots of messages from people saying they enjoy the podcast. I love getting messages from people who have got, you know, want to tell me they've chosen to get sober they've chosen to do this thing because of listening to the podcast. So please always feel free to message me on Instagram or whatever. And I always reply if I can. I think it's super important to tell somebody when you do this. I know that joining the Sober Club isn't for everybody. Of course, I would welcome if you want to join the Sober Club. It might not be for you, but whatever you do, don't keep it secret. Tell someone. Just tell someone who will be your cheerleader, who's someone who's got your back, because this is so worth doing. And if you do hole up and try and do it on your own, it gets much more difficult because the little voice, the little inner critic comes in and says, oh, don't be ridiculous. You can start that after Christmas. You may as well just have one, you know, all of that stuff. And actually, as we found over and over again, when you're connected, when you're part of a tribe of people who feel the same way or who've been through what you've been through, it's completely different. And just like the woman I mentioned who was, you know, having a real wobble, if she hadn't have written that post, I dare say the wine witch would have just said to her, oh, yeah, it's only one day, don't be ridiculous. Of course, you'll have a much better time if you drink. And then it could all have been a very different story. So I think, you know, we all need each other. So absolutely let someone know if you're going ahead and you're doing this. We're still in October, right? Seems bizarre. But if you've been doing the Sober for October thing, then keep going, right? Why would you stop? Why be sober just for October? What's the point of that? Keep going. Most of the benefits kick in after that 4-week period. So just think of all the amazing stuff you have to look forward to if you've managed to ditch the booze for October. Just focus always, always, always on what you're gaining and not what you're giving up, because you're not giving anything up, right? If you are listening to this on Friday, just about, don't forget it's the last day to get that discount on the supplement, the Advanced Liver Supplement as well. So you find all that info at thesoberclub.com. I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.